Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk, coming to you today from the Sugar Club in Dublin, with thanks to our friends in Marks and Spencer's. Joining us on the stage, Mick O'Connell, Leslie Williams, Serena Bellissimo, Olivia Fahey, and Chris Wasser. And Barbara and Declan are still here because, you know, free drink. God, there's a lot to get through. So why don't you tell us about the first wine that's being put in front of us,
okay,
Leslie?
So it is a Prosecco Rosé. All the wines today are from Italy and all from Marks and Spencer's. Prosecco we used to think of as this white grape, but these days you're allowed to make it as a rosé, as long as you put some Pinot Noir or Pinot Nero, as they would call it in Italy. And it's made in the classic method of Prosecco, where they make it in a big tank, and then they can do it quite inexpensively. This is only $13.50, which for a full fizz Prosecco, I think is pretty good. It's all sort of strawberry, peachy fruits. Mick, what do you think? Any thoughts?
I think it's delicious.
Yes.
Do we like, as a starting point?
Yeah.
Have you all got a glass of the Prosecco?
Yeah.
Oh, guys. We're jumping the gun. That's my fault. I apologise. I drank the rest of the bottle before we came on.
Yeah, nobody go into the green room.
The beauty here is, when you taste it in a second, is it's slightly drier because of the Pinot Noir, maybe, than probably what you get from the... You all know Prosecco, it's the party wine. But slightly drier in style here and really delicious.
But it still has a nice crisp kind of sweetness to it as well, which I like.
Yeah.
Okay, it's
nice sort of strawberry fruit.
It's the cocaine of the alcohol world.
Yeah.
Quote unquote.
Yes. I don't think that Marks and Spencer's will be using that as a slogan somehow. And I'd like to apologise to our sponsors who've been so kind to us over the last few years.
And don't forget, for Aperol spritzes and stuff, you need Prosecco in your house. So you just always have some in your fridge.
And the ABV on this is
11.5.
It won't be falling over.
No,
exactly. Yeah.
Breakfast wine.
Breakfast wine. Exactly. Fantastic.
Good with sausages. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
You could actually dip a sausage into it.
Yeah, you could. And if not, just show them the photographs on your phone.
You
know? Yeah. Wave the photographs on your phone over.
I tell you, crotches make her seem relatively tame kind of by comparison. Steve Carell is returning to television.
He is. And what's exciting is he's teaming up with the people from Ted Lasso.
Yeah.
So he's not coming back to The Office, which is going to be starring Donald Gleeson. This is going to be... He's a university professor. He's on campus, at a university campus. He plays an author and he's trying to connect with his daughter. It's a 10-part comedy series, and I'd say we need more of these. So I'm looking forward to this. We don't know much more, but anything with Steve Carell's amazing.
And you said Donald Gleeson's going to be in The Office.
Yeah, do you remember they're talking about... it was a few weeks ago now that was announced. Yeah, that there's a remake of The Office. I don't know why, even though I love Donald Gleeson.
I don't think
we need it.
It exists in the same universe as The Office, which is such a stupid sentence. But
yes.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's a different office.
It's a different office. It's a different paper company. And I think it's Sabrina Impagliotti, I'm not sure if I'm getting that name wrong, from The White Lotus, is going to be his boss.
Yeah, she played the hotel manager. She was great.
The hotel manager from The White Lotus, yeah.
Okay, all right. Yeah, might be.
It might work.
Speaking about totally unoriginal ideas, when I was about to say what films we're going to be talking about. Mad Max, really?
We're going back to before Fury Road, where we get to find out where Furiosa kind of came from. So Furiosa, you may remember from Fury Road, was played by Charlize Theron. And now she's played by Anya Taylor-Joy, and also a name who I have forgotten already, but there's actually a younger version of the character as well, and then the Anya Taylor-Joy version. So we actually get to see almost like three iterations of the character throughout the film.
Yeah, it looks amazing from the trailer. It really looks amazing.
Yeah, and actually, I was not a Fury Road fan, which I know is not a sentence that you hear very often. I am the minority of that. I was much more impressed by Furiosa, I have to say. And even, I think Chris and I were in agreement for once.
Yeah, definitely. I know Fury Road was like nominated for, what, 6 or 7 Oscars, or even won 6 Oscars, I think.
Yeah.
But it had that weird frame rate where everything, I think they filmed everything in slow motion and then sped it up in post-production. So everything just looks a bit shaky and cartoonish the whole time, and that just annoyed me. But he's not doing it here. And also, he has a new cast to play with. And yeah, I got on with this a lot better than the last one.
Yeah, me too. And even though it's...
Declan looks very excited.
Yeah.
I'd say you're a huge Mad Max fan.
I'm not a Mad Max fan, but I did actually quite like the feminist undertones of Fury Road.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh!
saying that. And I'm also intrigued as the three character, the child, the middle woman, and the old. I think that's kind of very classical in its kind.
I have one question. It's got nothing to do with anything about the films, but can you put that into an Aperol spritz?
Yes, absolutely. She's talking about a cocktail sauce.
Capri spritz is better. Because Campari's got about 5% more alcohol than Aperol.
Okay.
And it's drier.
I don't like Campari. I like an Aperol spritz.
Well, actually, on that subject, somebody wants to know how you make a good one. Aperol spritz.
I can tell you that.
You use Campari.
Go on, go.
Half Aperol, half Prosecco, and a little splash of soda water.
Yeah.
And
if you...
And a slice of orange.
Do you want to know how to make a better one?
Like ice.
Full. You were saying half.
No, half
full,
a measure.
Full.
No, yeah, but half the glass of Aperol, half the glass, and then a little bit of soda on the top. Am I right?
See, I would
just get a bigger glass.
Oh, you have to have a big glass.
Yeah. I would swap the Aperol for limoncello, though.
Oh, no, Campari all the way for me. I'm a Campari.
No, Campari's significantly drier. I mean, and it's about
like
23%, whereas Aperol Spritz is only, Aperol's only about 16% or something. And there's another one.
Who are you people?
Rickford.
What happened to drinking in fields?
Book fat.
The Garfield movie? Has been another Garfield.
I forgot we were talking about film. There have been other Garfield movies, live action with like a little bit of animation thrown in. Bill Murray providing the voice. This one is all animation, and it gives Chris Pratt a chance to do something he hasn't done in about 6 months, which is play a cartoon character again. He actually voiced Super Mario in the Super Mario Brothers movie, and there was an awful lot of controversy around his casting in this because it's like, why would you go with him? And also, why would you go? That's not how Garfield sounds, and everyone I think knew that he's just going to be Chris Pratt in this.
Yeah.
That's what he's going to do. So yeah, it's an animated film. It's about him, it's about Garfield finding his estranged father, Vic, voiced by Samuel L. Jackson, and they go off on a bit of an adventure together. Straight away, you're probably thinking, that's not
in the
Garfield.
Bin.
In the bin.
I just love how when they thought, it's like, who are we going to cast to play Chris Pratt's father? Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
The resemblance is uncanny, it must be said. You are listening to The Moncrief Show and News Talk. We do have to take a break. Back in a couple of minutes. Right, we'll move on to our first movie of the day. It is Furiosa, a Mad Max saga. Here's a clip.
Remember me. You fabulous thing. You crawled out of a pitiless grave deeper than hell. Only one thing's gonna do that for you. Not hope. Hate. No shame in hate. It's one of the great forces of nature. That wasn't hope, that was instinct.
Right, okay. You seem excited about that. Who'd like to go first?
Off you go, Chris.
Because you want the story, right?
Yeah.
Bear with me here. We're going into the background of a character named Furiosa who we would have seen in Mad Max Fury Road. She was played by Charlize Theron then. I think there was a whole big discussion about like how George Miller, the Australian filmmaker who co-created the Mad Max franchise, you know, that he could have de-aged Charlize Theron for this, but he actually wanted to go younger. And I understand that because it's a little bit gimmicky, de-aging.
Yeah.
So you have two actresses. One of them is Alia Brown, a child, and the other one is Anya Taylor-Joy playing the adult Furiosa. And the story goes that at the end of the world, on the edge of this dusty Australian outback, you have this Eden-esque paradise where basically all of the Australians have gone to live. It's a land of abundance, it's called. I think it's also called the Green World of Motherly Mothers or something like that. And this is where people are hiding away from biker hordes and warlords. And anyway, a young girl named Furiosa, she gets herself kidnapped by a biker, and they bring her back to this warlord named Dementus. That's Chris Hemsworth, who we saw. And he decides that he's going to raise the kid as his own. Well, that's his initial decision. But he wants her basically to lead the way back to this land of abundance. But along the way, he meets another warlord. He has different plans for her. This is all getting very complicated. Let's just say that Furiosa, when she grows up, she's not happy with these warlords having stolen her childhood, and she plots revenge. So that's a very basic outline of a very complicated film.
You did much better at that than I would have.
Okay.
Okay, and so is it like road movie, all the weird cars and
to a certain extent.
Stuff?
So this actually, it dives a little bit deeper more into kind of like the characters and a bit more of a plot as well, I find, because like I was saying actually earlier to Declan that when I watch Fury Road, I actually don't think that if I was to jump in at any point, because I find it very kind of like repetitive and all that, so I wouldn't be able to just jump in at a random point and know exactly where I am in the film. Whereas with Furiosa, I would. It's kind of blocked in a certain way that it's almost like 5 half-hour chapters. And so, yes, that means it is 2.5 hours long or a little bit over, but it flies by because, like, you know, I hate a long film. I'm much more happier with something that comes in just a little under 2 hours. But for me, this actually like flew by, and it's a lot more engaging. You feel a bit more attachment to the characters than you do in something like Fury Road. But there is still some banger action sequences as well, but it's just not as kind of like, here's an action scene, here's an action scene, here's an action scene. It has a bit more of a nice flow to it, I found.
Okay. Yeah, I never really felt attached to the characters, but I think that the action is just extraordinary. Like, it's an extraordinary beast of a film. Like, it's noisy, it's operatic, it's enormous. It cost $230 million to make. George Miller, he's just a madman himself. He hired thousands of people to help him get this film made. And Anya Taylor-Joy's been doing interviews recently where she said that this was an extraordinarily difficult film to make and that they might not have enjoyed their time on set. That's not a new thing with Mad Max films. Mm-hmm. Even going back to the Mel Gibson ones, he had a hard time with it because George Miller was basically a doctor, a 32-year-old doctor who decided, I'm going to make a film. Had never made a film before. So he was learning how to do it by, you know, on the spot. So he's still sort of kind of making things up as he goes along. But I'm really glad that he does it, because watching this, like, The Fall Guy was released a few weeks ago, and there was an awful lot of pressure on The Fall Guy being this love letter to stunt performers. Screw that. Half of that film is CGI. Yeah. And this, you are watching people risking their lives, jumping out of cars, riding these trio of motorcycles. It's all filmed in real life. There is a little bit of CGI around it, but it's extraordinary to watch. And I was talking to colleagues after the screening. I don't know how he does it. You know, I'm not a filmmaker, but I kind of know how maybe Marvel films are done or most action films. But in this, you're like, how did they do that without people losing their lives?
He employed mad Australians.
He did, yeah.
But also, there is
where life is cheap. Let's
There is a lot more CGI in this, though, than there was in Fury Road. And there were a couple of moments, I don't know if you noticed it as well, that you could really see when it was CGI. So I'm kind of like, I would rather see him do more of the real life stuff than relying on it, because clearly he's not very good at the CGI, to be blunt.
Right, okay. So, but this means you both kind of like this film, then. That means they're going to make 20 more of them.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they do, because there was also, like, ideas that they were having to spawn out and look at some of the other characters, how some of the other brides of Immortan Joe were kind of like came to be in the the fortress, the Dominion, I forget what it's called, where Immortan Joe lives, but besides the point.
The house where Immortan Joe lives, out in the outback, And there's some really good performances in it too, like Chris Hemsworth there, like he's been playing, you know, that blank, vacuous superhero for the last like a zillion years. So here he actually gets to do some acting for a change, and it suits him.
It was kind of reminiscent of him being in, I don't know if anybody saw it, Bad Times at the El Royale, where he plays like this cult leader, and he kind of like, you can see that he's relishing in being the bad guy, and he's relishing in being the bad guy in this as well. Like it's something that he could properly sink his teeth into, and he gets to be Australian in it as well. So
okay, yeah, all right, fair enough. One of those rarities, a film that's actually an original idea, Serena, there's going to be in August a film about Mary Robinson.
Oh, I can't wait.
Is it like Mary Robinson solves crimes?
Yes, completely. Yeah. And she takes on a young lover because it's called Mrs. Robinson.
Wow.
No.
You still would like to distance itself dramatically from those comments.
No, sorry, no. I watched it this morning. I have to say, being Australian, I'm not... I am in awe of Mary Robinson, but I don't know a lot about Mary Robinson. And I watched that trailer and I was like, wow, what a woman. I got chills just from the trailer alone.
Okay.
So it's about, what I love about this is it's not going to be someone plays Mary Robinson. It is Mary Robinson's story as told by her through footage of her. I also love that they're giving this a cinematic release, because if I got chills just watching this on YouTube, I really think this needs to be up on the big screen and everyone needs to go see it. I love what she said. She said, I hope it will inspire many young people and women in particular to reach their full potential. The trailer was released on Tuesday, which was her 80th birthday. I don't need to say it. Everybody knows it. She's an incredible woman and I cannot wait for this. It's going to be in cinemas on the 23rd of August, and I think everybody should watch this in a cinema.
Okay. Round of applause there. Right, we'll move on to our second wine of the day. Michael, tell us about it.
So we have Garganega Pinot Grigio here. So this is northeast Italy as well, same as the Prosecco Rosé that you had before. I did see the Prosecco Rosé coming around. Did you like it?
Yes!
That's what I was looking for last time around, but excellent. Do you have the Garganega Pinot Grigio?
Yes!
Excellent stuff. And do we like this?
Yes!
Okay, we're winning now. We're winning. This is good. So Garganega is the grape variety that you mainly see in Suave. You'll have seen Suave on the shelves. It's a... Just to get a little nerdy for a moment, it's volcanic soils just northeast of Verona. And this particular one is from northeast of Verona, and it's also from west of Verona where Lake Garda is. So this is Garda DOC. So this is proper holiday juice. But you have very, very crisp white and the famous Pinot Grigio added in for a little bit of cachet. Garganega is not something that you're going to see the name of very frequently, but we all know Pinot Grigio, right?
Yeah.
Excellent. And you've got this crisp, mineral, refreshing, dry style of wine here. And this is a bargain. I think is this 9.50?
It's 9.50.
Yeah.
Garganega. Garganega.
Garganega.
Italian in there. I actually think there's a lovely texture in this. You know?
That's great.
You know, because Pinot Grigios are often a bit light and a bit simple and a bit, you know, thin. This is actually textured and floral and, you know.
Us wine nerds are always very particular about Pinot Grigio, you know.
Yeah.
It has to be Pinot Gris from Alsace, you know.
But, you know,
Pinot Grigio.
You head up to Trentino and up the north and you can get some really interesting Pinot Grigios.
And when wine experts get together, do you have to do the accents? Is that a thing?
I have been practicing this with Italian friends. Seriously. Whenever I meet an Italian, I repeat all the words. Montepulciano d'Abruzzo.
Oh, they must love that.
Brunella di Montalcino. If you don't put the emphasis on, they don't understand what you're saying.
Yeah, it's true.
It's a little bit like Marvel. We all get into our kit, which is usually tweed and red trousers.
Yeah.
It's very, very important, the uniform. And then we put on various voices and speak very posh.
Okay, excellent. And Serena Bellissimo might be a clue
Bellissimo.
There. Why did you think about that accent?
I'm too scared to say otherwise. It was brilliant, fantastical.
Can I just say it's got a lovely label? With
it's
a
got a lovely label.
It's a nice it's
okay. Maybe you should stop drinking now, Barbara.
No, but it helps when you go into the shop if you look for the nice label with the birdie.
Ah, yes, that's true. Yeah,
I'm being helpful.
That's a good point. You are being helpful.
Thank you.
Yes. Right, so tell us about Steven Spielberg's new movie, Serena.
I will. Before we do, a death has just come through.
Oh,
can
what?
I just... Morgan Spurlock. Do you know
the guy who did Super Size Me?
Yeah, sorry, I was just scrolling.
And that was the 20th anniversary of the film just the other week.
He just died yesterday.
The 20th anniversary?
From
eating hamburgers?
No, it's not from eating hamburgers. But
you had to go there, Leslie.
Too soon.
No, apparently he was he had cancer.
Oh,
God.
And he died yesterday at 53, so I just thought that's I'd young. Put that out there.
Thanks for bringing them up. Yeah.
Let's go to Steven Spielberg, who has just been said that in 2026 he's going to release his next feature film. We don't know a lot about it. We do know that he's going to team up with David Cope, who has worked with him on Jurassic Park, War of the Worlds and Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. All we know about it so far is that it's going to be an epic movie and it could involve UFOs. So I'm thinking, will he give us another E.T.? Because his last film, while it was critically acclaimed, The Fablemans, it didn't really do that well at the box office.
Mm.
So I'd love to have a great Spielberg hit. 2026 is when it's coming out. The problem is when it comes out, he's going to be going up against, can't believe we have more of this, another Star Wars film and another Avengers film. So I'm hoping...
I fancy his chances. I really do.
Yeah, because people will want something different. Yeah. So, yes, I'm looking forward to something that Steven Spielberg puts out.
OK, that's a bit of good news for a change. 087 1400 106 is our WhatsApp number. You are listening to The Moncrief Show on News Talk. Coming to you today from the Sugar Club in Dublin with thanks to our friends Marks and Spencer. Mick, Leslie, Serena, Olivia, Chris, Barbara and Declan are still with us on stage. God, that's a lot of people to have on stage. Yeah, are you all right, Declan? You haven't said it in a while.
Yeah, I'm tasting wine and learning about movies.
Okay, all right, that's fine. That was a nice kind of neutral answer there. Okay, we'll move on to our third wine of the day. Leslie, I suppose you have to say it. Come on, say it in your...
Montepulciano d'Abruzzo.
Okay.
And it is not to be confused with the wine from Tuscany called Vino Nobile di Montepulciano, which is different. In that instance, Montepulciano is the town, whereas this instance, Montepulciano is the grape. And sorry, we got the prices mixed up. This is $9.50. The Pinot Grigio Garganica was $12.50. So yeah, we're southern. This is where southern Italy begins. You're basically in the centre of Italy. It's a really green region. It's really, really pretty. And this is kind of one of their main exports. It's massive. And look, it's one of my reliable... Like, if you're in a random pizzeria in the middle of nowhere... Go for the Montepulciano d'Abruzzo. Don't go for something. Don't go for the Chianti. Go for the Montepulciano. I think you probably agree, Mick.
I'd say even if you're in a pizzeria in the city centre, go for the Montepulciano over the Chianti, probably.
Yeah.
They tend to be these really like juicy, bright reds. With this one, you've got a little bit of character as well. It's dry. There's some nice bite with the tannin. So this is actually a real foodie wine. You could probably even go up the charts from pizza and into meat and pasta and all sorts.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's a couple of years old, so it's a bit grown up. Yeah.
It is 2022.
Yeah.
Well spotted. Sure.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Fantastico.
Yeah, that's my job is to read stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Essentially. And how, sorry, and that's $9.50.
$9.50.
Okay, that's...
Yeah,
that's pretty.
Yeah,
you can hardly get a pint for $9.50.
No.
Yeah,
not in Temple.
Well, certainly not around here. Yeah, that's for sure. What I'm looking forward to is this Ian Bailey movie, Serena.
Are you really?
Yeah, because and you're just in a this might be terribly wrong kind of way.
Yeah, like because Jim Sheridan was it last year, Chris, that he did the documentary.
It was. Yeah. He's done a couple. Yeah, if for some reason he's determined to die on this hill, I don't know why he's devoting his whole career.
Convince
to this.
The guy is innocent and nobody else does.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what he's trying to do. He's just basically he's trying to question what actually happened on that night, and he's roped in Colm Meaney to play Ian Bailey, and as well as Colm Meaney, we've also got Aidan Gillen. I don't know who he's going to play, but I don't understand why Jim Sheridan is just... There's so many other stories I'd love to see him tell.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is the one.
I really don't want to watch
it. No, but Colm Meaney is going to play Ian Bailey.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ian Bailey is dead, isn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He only died
recently.
Which means we can't defame him. What a creepy mother.
He was so creepy.
Yeah. And...
Yeah.
I don't know, I'm more puzzled by why Colm Meaney would do it.
And that's the thing, rather than Jim Sheridan, because this is something that Jim Sheridan wants to keep retelling. But I am shocked that Colm Meaney, because he's done great things, he's in The Dry at the moment on RTE, he was brilliant in Belfast. I just don't know why he's going down this road.
No. Yeah. Maybe it's a challenge to play a really kind of creepy guy.
Possibly. So anyway, there's no release date or anything, but that's just been... Yeah. Announced.
Who'd fund a film like that anyway?
Probably, it'd have to probably be Jim.
It might become like, a pocket.
This would be a passion project, I'd say.
Gosh, is he that rich?
I don't know.
Yeah.
He just sold his house in D4, so yeah.
There you go. That answers that question. Yeah. Right, so let's move on to our second movie of the day. It's The Garfield Movie. Here's an exciting clip. Yeah, it's that part is in mime. It was poorly chosen. So apologies for that. So I don't know, something happened there. But anyway, Olivia, do you want to tell us what goes on with the Garfield movie?
Kind of difficult for me because I actually, unfortunately, missed the screening. But okay. I am...
Make it up.
I know.
Oh, I love this. This is better. We're going to stick with you, Olivia.
But I am a big, massive Garfield fan. So I've been very much excited when I heard they were bringing another movie to the screen. But then desperately disappointed when I heard that it was Chris Pratt that was going to be voicing him. I don't know why, when there are so many people who have voiced Garfield in the TV series that we all know and love, who can do it very well. Yeah, I don't know why they went for the Chris Pratt route, as Chris pointed out earlier as well. He's already taken on another iconic voice, which was Mario, when Charles Martinet was still around. But, you know, this is the way it is, and this is what we got. So, yep, Garfield gets to reunite with his father, called Vic, and they end up going on this big adventure together, and there is this big, bad cat. Her name is Jinx. She's voiced by Hannah Waddingham, who people will know from Ted Lasso. And she is actually... She's got a henchman who is voiced by Brett Goldstein, who was Roy Kent in Ted Lasso as well. So this is actually a nice little kind of fun Ted Lasso Easter egg in there for us. And yeah, they just get up to some hijinks, and John is voiced by Nicholas Hoult.
And why is he reunited with the father? Was the father being in prison or something?
So basically, he left Garfield and was told him, you know, like, wait there, I'll be back for you. Never came back. And
then abandonment issues.
Yeah. You know, proper daddy issues going on here. And essentially, that's when Garfield met John, when he was just a little kitten after being abandoned by his dad.
Aww. Okay, so Chris, you've actually seen the film.
I've forgotten all about it, actually. I was trying to work out the plot in this film, so I think Garfield's dad...
Olivia did it perfectly. She didn't even see it.
I think Garfield's dad, his real dad, played by Samuel L. Jackson, not Playboy, not Samuel L. Jackson in a cat suit, although that would be a better film.
Yeah.
He owes a milk debt to this cat named Jinx, played by Hannah Waddingham, and he has to go off and get something like 1,600 crates of milk. So he goes back to his son Garfield and says, I need your help. The whole time I was watching this, I was thinking, this is not Garfield. Mm-hmm. Garfield's supposed to sit around all day feeling sorry for himself because everyone wants him to do things. He's lazy, he doesn't like Mondays, he just eats lasagna, he makes John's life a living hell. That's Garfield. So there shouldn't be heist sequences, there shouldn't be, you know, drones and aircrafts and trains and adventures. That's just a different character altogether. So I think that's a big problem. Another problem is that voice cast. But Hannah Waddingham, I think it's gas how everyone was excited about Hannah Waddingham or just the voice cast in this film. She is the only person here who understands that there's a difference between just recording lines for an animation and then actually putting on a performance. She's actually really good in this because she's committed to it. Everyone else is just recording their lines. Oh, this is Chris Pratt sounding like Chris Pratt. This is Sam Jackson sounding like Sam Jackson. I don't think that's really good enough anymore.
No.
So there's problems with the storytelling. And it took three people to come up with this story as well, which is... And it sounds like I'm hating on Garfield. I nearly died for Garfield once. So, yeah, I know. I have to tell that story now. But yeah. When I was a kid, my dad was doing up our bedroom. I shared a bedroom with my twin brother. And there was...
You have a twin brother?
I do. He does not look... I'm going to disappoint you now. He doesn't look anything like me. He doesn't look anything like me. But we had a dodgy cabinet in the corner of the room that a lot of stuff was going on while my dad was painting the room. And I had a Garfield book which fell down the back. And I thought it'd be a good idea to try and grab the book. And I pulled at the cabinet. Ended up in the hospital. The cabinet fell on top of me. Francis, my brother, he thought I was dead. I'm still alive, obviously. So, you know. So I nearly died for this cat. And so to kind of have this film...
What kind of injuries did you have?
What's that?
What kind of injuries did you have?
I hurt my head. I was just in for the night. That was all. Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. People are there now. Oh, that's what happened. Yeah. But So it's just the film is just all over the place. It's not pretty to look at. There's no good jokes in it. I think that the loveliest bit about it, and this speaks volumes, is actually the beginning when we get this silent sequence of Garfield.
Well, that was the bit we showed, I think. Yeah.
There's this lovely sequence at the beginning where it's completely silent and it shows a baby Garfield meeting John for the first time. And the reason this segment works is because it's so simple. There's no dialogue. It's just visuals. It's just a baby cat sharing a pizza with a man. And I thought, that's the way to go. There's some cleverness in there. But the rest of it is just noise. So it didn't work for me.
But my 8-year-old loved it. I asked my 13-year-old what she thought, and she was like, yeah, this isn't for me. This is for 9 and under. And my 8-year-old said, this is his review. It was a good movie. I wasn't expecting it to be that good. I think it's kind of funny, and there's lots of twists. Things happen... He's explaining what a twist is. Things happen at times when you don't expect them to happen. I liked hearing Garfield's backstory, and I think he's very funny. It's a good film for all of the family.
Okay.
It's,
very good.
So I think it's for the little ones.
Very well written there. Yeah. I think it probably is aimed at his age group, Chris, rather than you with your Garfield-associated trauma.
I love this cat. Yeah, it probably is. Although, look, the bar is set so high for kids' films nowadays as well that when you go and see something that lazy, it is disappointing. So, yeah, I just don't think Garfield is meant to be on the big screen. And there's no real evidence here to suggest that anyone even picked up the Jim Davis comic before or saw the cartoons because they are so clever, they're so funny, but this just has no imagination, no wit. It's like there's also so many Tom Cruise jokes in it. It's so strange.
That's odd.
There's like there's the Top Gun theme is in there, the Mission Impossible theme. There's all sorts of jokes about Tom Cruise doing his own stunts. So the film doesn't really know who it's aiming at or who it's really for.
Yeah, the kids.
There's an unfortunate trend in Hollywood at the moment where they take these absolutely massively famous IPs and then just kind of do their own thing with it without going back and looking at the source material at all. Like I always remember like the Uncharted film. All the video game nerds were just like, no, that has absolutely nothing to do with the actual video games. But they still like took it, ran with it, and did this whole thing around it. So I think Garfield is after getting the Uncharted treatment.
Interesting if somebody asked real cats what they thought of it.
Yeah, yeah.
They'll never do that.
You immediately got the hump when we were talking about Spielberg versus Star Wars. Yeah. Like, are you looking forward to, in 2 years' time, the regurgitation of yet another tedious episode in this ongoing saga that will never end?
Yes, I am, because essentially this is Mandalorian Season 4. So, and I am not alone in this room.
Just put it on the TV. Like, we don't need another big screen adaptation.
But no, we do for this story. For this story to come to its fruition, we've been 3 seasons deep. We want this big screen ending to it. And, like, come on, this is the series that gave us Grogu, one of the most adorable and loved characters that we have had from Star Wars in many, many years. So I, for one, am really looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing Din Djarin coming back to his kind of bounty hunter roots as opposed to the kind of the Mandalorian story had kind of taken more of a him trying to find his culture, his home again, whereas now he's kind of going back to the I'm just going to go and try and like catch a bunch of bad guys, and that's what I'm looking forward to.
But Grogu, like, there's been 3 series of this cute little thing. It hasn't grown up. It doesn't really do anything. It just makes noises.
Genius.
When's he going to like move out and get a job? You know,
well,
that's my question.
I have to remember, like, as small and tiny as Yoda was, he was more than 900 years old when he died.
Yes.
So Grogu could be more than 100 years old. They actually don't really know. And so, like, he was around when Order 66 kicked in. And Anakin Skywalker, sorry to everybody who doesn't know the Star Wars story, he, you know, comes in and kills all the Jedi and the younglings and turns into Darth Vader. Sods.
It's ruined it now for
50 years.
Ruined it. Yeah.
But Grogu was actually around in the Jedi Temple when that happened, and so he is like that old. And we don't really know what his origin is. I'm kind of hoping that his like father is Yoda and that his mother is the other.
It's a Slayer.
No, that would be a shocker. But there's another creature from Yoda's planet. No.
There is a porn film with exactly that, though.
Wow.
For the record, I haven't
Barbara,
seen
no.
That.
She knew that. She
I did, of course. Yeah.
But anyways, I'm excited for it. I think everybody else should be excited for it as well. Like, this is coming from someone who just built the Lego Millennium Falcon for work, so...
For work.
Legitimately for work
as well. It's on our Instagram. You should all go look at it. It's very, it's a thing of beauty, to be fair, Olivia. I was very impressed.
How big is it?
It's a huge joke.
Oh, so that was the Avengers Tower, yes.
Sorry, that was...
That was 5,000 pieces, and it took me 3 months to build.
Oh, my God.
Wow. And where do you keep it?
At the moment, it is on a shelf in the living room because there is literally nowhere else I can put it because it is half my height is how tall it is. So we're eventually, because my husband is also big into Lego as well, he's got a lot of the Lego Technic cars, like Porsches, Ferraris and that type of thing. So we're going to build like a case in the front room that we can display them all in.
Cool.
Is the case going to be made out of Lego as well?
Do you know, that's actually a really good idea.
Yeah, there you go. You can have that one
it
for free.
It is pretty sturdy.
There you go. DIY ideas and everything. That's our lot for today, I'm afraid. From the Sugar Club. Thanks to Barbara and Declan, to Mick, Leslie, Serena, Olivia and Chris. Our production team today was Paul Buckland, Ben Griffin, Rachel Hogan, William Murphy, Laura Kelly, Michael Quilligan, Maurice O'Sullivan, Simon Tierney and Sean Reedy. An awful lot of people put these shows together. It must be said. Thanks to the Sugar Club as ever. Thanks to our sponsors, Marks and Spencers.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.